following is a WGMD special event. Live from the Cape Henlopen High School in Lewis, Delaware, a conversation with Governor Jack Markell. Tonight's moderators are Dennis Forney, publisher of the Cape Gazette newspaper, and Jim Rash, talk show host at the Talk of Delmarva, WGMD. Here's Dennis Forney.
Everybody, if everybody could take their seats, we can get this program underway. And we can thank Walt Palmer and Art and Jim and all the folks at WGMD for this wonderful photography and professional presentation tonight. Let's give them a nice round of applause. So on behalf of the Cape Henlopen High School, who was kind enough and generous enough to provide this venue tonight for our Conversations with the Governor program and WGMD and the Cape Gazette. It's my sincere pleasure to welcome everybody out here tonight to be part of this wonderful democratic experiment that this country's had underway now for over 200 years and being part of an active citizenry. So congratulations for taking a real interest in your government and being out here tonight to ask the governor some questions, ask the governor and his secretaries, cabinet secretaries some questions, and hear what they've got to say about moving Delaware forward. Just a couple little notes. The format will be basically, I'm welcoming you. In a few minutes, we're going to talk to the WGMD about what they're going to be doing with their broadcast. Then I'm going to introduce the governor, who introduced his cabinet secretaries that he has with him tonight. And then after that, I will throw out the first question just to get things warmed up. And then we'll have Jim Rash from WGMD and Tom over here on the other side with the red hair. Tom's going to be handling the microphones over there, and we'll take questions from the audience. And what I would ask is, when you put your hand up, please have your question in mind. We don't mind a few comments, but then have your question. Try to keep it brief, to the point, and allow the governor and the cabinet secretaries to do their thing. That's what we're here for tonight. Hear your comments, hear your questions, hear the responses. And we have about an hour to do that. Some of you have given questions on index cards up there. If for some reason we don't get to your questions tonight, make sure that you leave your questions on an index card there at the table toward the back. And if you have some contact information, you can leave there. The governor and his staff will try to get a response back to you. So obviously we can't get to all of it in an hour, but we'll do the best job that we can. So once again, on behalf of the Cape Henlopen High School and WGMD-FM and Cape Gazette, it's a great pleasure to welcome you all here tonight. And I'm going to turn it over right now to Jim Rash from WGMD to tell you about what the radio station's doing. Jim?
Thank you, Dennis. Well, I want to thank everybody for coming out. This is great. I've had a chance to have a couple words with the governor, and he's ready to take your questions. So what we'll do, I'll be coming up the center aisle, and if you have a question, move yourself to the aisle, and then you'll be able to ask the governor a question. Let's see. Oh, I do want to mention that after this is over, you'll be able to get replays available at WGMD.com, at CapeGazette.com, and at Delaware.gov. So you'll be able to go back and listen to the whole thing, and in some instances, I'm sure you'll be able to see it as well. So, once again, welcome, Governor. Once again, thank you. And, well, I look forward to this. This is going to be a good evening. Thanks, Dennis.
Thank you, Jim. Okay. 1998, Jack Markell was coming off of a very strong career in the private sector, was very high up in the Nextel Corporation, working on that whole digital revolution that this country is now totally immersed in. He decided it was time to get himself from the private sector into the public sector. So he ran for the office of treasurer for the state of Delaware. Came by it naturally. His father taught accounting at University of Delaware, correct? So numbers were in his blood. And he ran for that office, and he was successful in achieving that. He ran again in 2002 and was successful. He ran again in 2006 and was successful. So 3 years as treasurer gave him a lot of insight into the budget for Delaware, how the money was spent, how it was being watched, and all that. In 2008, he decided he'd like to go for the top spot. He ran successfully. He was elected to governor. And then in 2012, he was elected for his second term. When he first came into office, it wasn't a very enviable position to show up on your first day of work and realize you had a budget with an $800 million deficit. And Delaware, like many states, all of them, I believe, has to have a balanced budget. So he had the unenviable task of trying to address that $800 million budget and knowing there were going to be a lot of unhappy people, but knowing at the same time that over the long haul, he had to do it to bring stability to the state. And if he wasn't able to do that, the state's very, very important AAA bond rating was going to be in jeopardy. He was successful in keeping that budget balanced, some painful cuts, had to cut state employees' salaries. Nobody likes to be in that position, but he had to do it to get there. Happy to report that he did maintain the AAA bond rating and was able to keep Delaware on firm financial footing. So, here he is tonight, Governor Jack Markell, 52 years old. The buck stops here in the state of Delaware. I'm going to turn the mic over to him right now and introduce Governor Jack Markell, and he can introduce members of his cabinet.
Thank you, Dennis. I very much appreciate all of you coming out tonight. I want to thank WGMD and the Cape Gazette. I had a chance to listen to WGMD on my way over tonight from Wilmington, so I'm looking forward to all the questions. I know a lot of you called in earlier, and I appreciate the sponsorship both of GMD and Cape Gazette. There are a number of elected officials here tonight who I'd like to acknowledge, members of the General Assembly. This is not in any particular order. I see a few of them sitting right in front of me, which is always a good thing. That way I can't miss you. But Speaker of the House, Pete Schwarzkopf, is in the back. All of them deserve a lot of applause, but I know you've got a lot of questions, and we don't have that much time, so if you don't mind holding the applause till the end. Is that okay with you guys? I figured it would be. I saw Senator Ernie Lopez over here. I saw Representative John Atkins, Representative Harvey Kenton, Senator Gerald Hocker, Representative Ron Gray. Who am I leaving out in the General Assembly? Steve Smick, Representative Steve Smick, and State Senator Gary Simpson. State Representative Ruth Briggs King, and Senator Brian Pettyjohn. Anybody else? All right, you get in big trouble if you're in my office and you forget to, you don't acknowledge all the members of the General Assembly. I want to thank all of you for coming. The members of the General Assembly work very, very hard. I think one of the things that we do in Delaware better than most places I know is we work together across party lines. We have our disagreements, but we remember that it's your interests that we have to put first. So let's hear it for the members of the General Assembly. I'm guessing there are a number of local elected officials here tonight. I haven't seen that many, but I did see Mayor Jim Ford of Lewis, so I do want to introduce Jim, sitting in the back here. Jim, thank you very much. And quite a few members of your cabinet. This is your cabinet. I have the unbelievable opportunity as governor. We have 16 cabinet departments, and one of my responsibilities, and it's really an honor, is to select people to serve in the cabinet. And we have a very talented team, again, of very hardworking people. And I'm going to introduce them in the order in which they're sitting. I'm going to ask the members of the cabinet to stand up so everybody can see your face, but I'll ask you to hold your applause until the end. Jennifer Ranji is the secretary of our kids department. Ann Vasali is the director of the Office of Management and Budget. Mark Murphy is the secretary of education. Anas Benati is the director of the State Housing Authority. Rob Koop is the commissioner of the Department of Correction. Jim Sills is the head of the Department of Technology and Information. Tom Cook is our secretary of finance. Jeff Bullock is our secretary of state. Alan Levin is the director of the Delaware Economic Development Office. Tom Smith here representing the secretary of labor, John McMahon. Ed Key is our Secretary of Agriculture. I'm going to skip over the Adjutant General just for one moment. Colin O'Mara is our Secretary of the Department of Natural Resources. Shailen Bhatt is our Secretary of Transportation. And General Vavila is the Adjutant General of the Delaware National Guard. And in just a moment, I'm going to ask him to lead all of us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Before I do so, I want to say that we were together just a few days ago welcoming home about 145 members of the 153rd Military Police Company who just returned from about 9 months in Afghanistan. It's always wonderful to welcome the men and women of the Delaware National Guard home. But just a couple days later, about 40 new folks deployed back to Afghanistan. And so we actually, although we're pulling, you know, the United States has been pulling out, we've got more people deployed. We've had more people deployed from Delaware in the National Guard this year than we've ever had deployed previously. So, General, on behalf, I'm sure, of all the people here and all the people of Delaware, I want to thank you for your leadership, and if you could please convey all of our appreciation to the members of the National Guard, and if you'd lead us in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And with that, before I give the microphone back to Dennis to ask the first question, I would ask, because we do have people listening in, I'm guessing there are probably people listening in tonight who are members of the National Guard, who may be at the Dover Air Force Base or other members of the military. Given the shutdown of the government this week, unfortunately 350 members of the Delaware National Guard have been sent home, hundreds of folks from the Air Force Base as well. And if you could join me in expressing our appreciation to all of our members of the armed forces who are out there on our behalf. Thank you. So in just a second, I'm going to give the mic back to Dennis so he can ask the first question. I know that you've got a lot of questions. I want to make sure that we get to as many of them as possible. I look forward tonight to talking about our efforts around economic development, around education, and around so many of the other issues that you all care about. We're going to make this as interactive as we possibly can. Again, I am really grateful. I mean, this is a big commitment for so many members of the cabinet. Just about everybody is here. They all have other places that they could be, but they wanted to come tonight, and I wanted them to come because it's important, I think, for you all to see not only your elected officials, but also the people who serve you in Dover. And so I'm grateful to them, and there will be times tonight where I may hand the mic to them to follow up on an answer that I've given, but we look forward to taking your questions and also hearing your suggestions tonight. So with that, Dennis, it's all yours.
Thank you, Governor. Again, the ground rules, state your name. My name is Dennis Forney. State where you live. I live in Lewis, Delaware. And I do have a question in mind. I was thinking about some things I could ask about. Maybe the Indian River Inlet and the bridge down there, very challenging situation. Maybe sea level rise certainly affects all of us here along the coast. And a number of other things. But I thought that maybe it would be nice to get some perspective from you, from a past chairman of the National Governors Association. We're standing here tonight at a very historic moment in our nation's history. We have a government shutdown. And from your perspective of having interacted with the governors, having some sense as somebody who's very interested in politics, can you give us a sense from maybe 20,000 feet up looking down at the United States, what's going on in this country?
It's quite likely that somebody in the audience has a better perspective on that than I do. But let me give it my best shot. And I should say that just as I was walking in tonight, I got an email from Senator Coons, who wishes that tonight goes well, but also expressing his ongoing concern about the shutdown. And he is trying to articulate as best he can to his colleagues in Washington about what the shutdown means to us in Delaware. And I'm going to talk about that in just a moment. Yesterday I was in Washington, and I got to meet with a number of members of Congress, Democrats and Republicans alike. Congressman Carney was not at that particular meeting. These are congressmen and members, congresswomen, who are working together to try to figure a way out. And I had a chance to ask each of them, if they've had a chance to work with Congressman Carney. And every one of them said in response that he is incredibly well respected for being a straight shooter and a problem solver. And Senator Carper, of course, has, you know, decades of experience also trying to solve problems, working across, you know, all interests. And so I think we are very well served in Delaware, and I'm grateful for the representation that we have there. It's an incredibly frustrating thing to see, because the problem is to so many people who are involved, there are so many people for whom this is just about politics. This is not about politics. For the 350 members of our Delaware National Guard who were sent home on the other day, this is not about politics. We in Delaware have about 6 weeks' worth of money for what's called women, infant, and children, WIC, for things like food vouchers. We have, because of the shutdown, this is all federal money. There are a number of programs within state government that are run by the state, but that are administered by the state, but that represent federal resources. The federal government pays for them, not just in Delaware, but across the country. This is how it works. And so for between, I'm going to name a few programs, things like the low-income heating program. It's called LIHEAP. Between 10 and 20,000 Delawareans count on this money to keep their houses warm during the winter. Whether it is what's called TANF, Temporary Assistance to Needy Families, between 10 and 20,000 families are part of that. The Social Services Block Grant, which pays for things like protective care and case management and foster care, both adult and child, between 10 and 20,000 Delawareans. For those programs, we have 1 week worth of money. This is the situation we're in. This is not about politics. This is about real people whose lives are impacted by the dysfunction in Washington. And so, you know, as I said at the beginning, we have tonight, you have sitting, you know, in the audience and standing, you've got members of the General Assembly who are Democrats and Republicans. I'm a Democrat. And I don't always agree with the Republicans, and they don't always agree with me. And for that matter, some of the Democrats here will tell you they don't always agree with me, and I don't always agree with them either. But what we try to do is we try to say, okay, we're gonna figure it out. We're gonna sit down, and in the end, we've got to come up with something that works for the people of the state. And I know a whole lot of people who are just unbelievably frustrated that politics seems to be getting in the way of what really matters. In terms of serving the people of the state. Where it ends up, I don't know. I did read today that Speaker Boehner said that he would not allow the country to go in default, which I think is incredibly important. If you talk to most economists and what the implications of default would be, the country not paying the debts that it owes, it would be catastrophic. And so I think that's encouraging that he has said that. But what the exact path out of this is, I just don't know yet.
Thank you, sir. Jim, let's get a question here from the audience.
What's the question?
There you go. Remember your name, where you live, and try to keep it to about a minute, and then Okay. Let some response. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Henry Bennett. I'm from Frankfort, Delaware. I'm actually the sixth generation to successfully cultivate our century farm in Sussex County. I'd like to say that I feel very fortunate to live in a state where we have access to our state and local politicians. Since we are talking about how to improve Delaware's economy tonight, I would like to remind everyone that agriculture is still the number one industry in our state, providing jobs and a sustainable base of economic growth. The Department of Transportation's Route 113 Eastern Bypass has been overwhelmingly rejected by Sussex Countyans for numerous reasons, including its devastating impact on agriculture. With all due respect, sir, my question is why sacrifice valuable farmland, which has fostered economic growth for generations of Delawareans, when we already have a viable solution by utilizing the existing 113 corridor for our long-term transportation needs?
Okay, thank you for the question. I know there's a lot of interest in the 113 corridor. In a second, I'm going to turn it over to our Secretary of Transportation, who is on the edge of his seat waiting to respond. I do want to say I appreciate the first part of the I almost thought this was a softball set up by Secretary Key about the importance of agriculture. But I appreciate the first part, and you're right. I mean, agriculture in Delaware is an $8 billion industry, and Secretary Key and I have been visiting a lot of farms throughout the state, and it's just amazing to see the work that gets done here and how Delaware really is a food basket for so much of the country and beyond. With respect to 113, and I'll let Secretary Batt get into the details. I mean, I think there has been widespread recognition for a long time that something has to be done there, because I mean it is a mess, and you know, the challenge, and this has been the subject of an unbelievable number of community forums, very public forums over a long period of time. And so it does seem at the moment that there's a lot of public anxiety about it. And Secretary Batt, I know, has been and will continue to work with the Sussex County legislators to talk about where it goes from here. But with that, I think I'm going to turn it over to Secretary Batt.
So thank you for your question. And I figured I would get a question about 113 tonight. And I know it's an issue that's very important to people down here. So I think there's a couple of things that we need to keep in mind. One is that we absolutely have to follow all the federal rules when it comes to building a project like this, because we're going to use federal dollars. 80% of the project will be paid for using federal dollars. When you use federal dollars on a project, that means you have to get community involvement, you have to get public perspective. But we also have to be responsible for are the 80,000 people a day who are currently using 113. And that is somebody who is not going to be represented in the room today because they're not here tonight. They're not here on a regular basis. And so there are a wide, diverse range of issues here. But I want to set your mind at ease a little bit. What we are looking at right now is probably going to be a billion-dollar project over the next 30 years. What we're focused on right now is an alignment that is currently being looked at that is north of Millsboro. But we have to, as a 40-year plan, look at where it's going to go in the future. We have to take into account future growth. And I agree with you that it is possible to put it on the existing alignment of 113. But if DLDOT announced tomorrow that we were going to not look at the preferred alternative right now, which has been identified east of Millsboro, I guarantee there would be people who would come to the next meeting and say, there's no way that you can build this road on existing 113 because you're going to take my land. And so I also want to give you another example. When the Department of Transportation built Route 1, as an alternative to Route 13 back in the late 90s and 2001, I believe, is when it opened. It's about a $1.2 billion project. I guarantee you we took some farms, which nobody wants to do. I guarantee you we took some personal property, private property of people. But could you imagine the state today without Route 1? And I don't know any way to say this other than when you build roads, there are going to be impacts. We work to mitigate those impacts. We are not currently looking at building that is a preferred alternative that's probably 15, 20, 30 years away from even being looked at funded, but there's no way to address transportation issues in Sussex County without having impacts to somebody.
Good evening, Governor. My name is Bill Moyer. I'm from Dover, but I was born in Lewis, so I consider myself a Sussex Countyan. I'm here to speak on behalf of the Inland Bays Foundation, its board, and its members. The response to the efforts of the Inland Bays Foundation over the past 2.5 years to make the Inland Bays once again fishable and swimmable and not polluted has been incredibly underwhelming. We have received no response from any elected or appointed official to offer our foundation any guidance. To say that this has been a disappointment would be a statement of the obvious. Needless to say, we are at a loss as to why Sussex County, which continues to ignore its state-approved land use plan, and the state are seemingly unconcerned with a resource that is a most important recreational and economic resource to Delaware and its residents. Too many years have passed with too little action. I have one question that has three parts. It's really three questions, but I'm making it look like one. The IBF has prepared a document which indicates 26 roadblocks to making improvements to the Inland Bays. Would you be willing to appoint a Blue Ribbon panel or task force to examine these roadblocks and to make corrective recommendations to you? Would you establish a watershed improvement plan or WIP for the Inland Bays watershed that is similar to the WIP plan that has now been implemented for the western one-third of Delaware as part of the Chesapeake Bay cleanup effort? This could be accomplished by an Inland Bays environmental protection statute. And three, would you support a bill to give authority to DENREC to establish meaningful buffers in the Inland Bays watershed since the Supreme Court has ruled that the state does not have the necessary statute to implement buffers?
Okay, so thank you for the question. I'm going to turn it over to Secretary O'Meara in a moment. I do want to make a couple of points first. I mean, first of all, I mean, Secretary Key could probably comment on this as well. One of the things that I think Delaware has actually done fairly well over the last 15 years or so is focus on the issue of runoff from poultry farms. And it's because poultry farmers in Delaware came together literally starting in the mid-90s when Senator Carper was the governor. And we believe that we're starting to see some improvement in water quality as a result of that. So I think it's important that be put out there, because there have been a lot of people, not just within government, not just within DENREC or the Department of Agriculture, but a lot of folks in the agriculture community who have been working very hard on that. That's number one. Number two, I was at the Center for Inland Bays recently to sign a bill that Speaker Schwarzkopf sponsored around aquaculture, because a lot of people feel that that will actually have a double impact. It will help clean up the bays, while also providing some economic development opportunity as well for people to grow and to sell aquaculture locally. What I'd like to do is turn it over to Secretary O'Mara to sort of give a bit of an overview of some of the other activities, and then we can come back to your specifics.
Good. Thanks, Governor, and thanks, everybody, for being here. And Bill and I know each other well and have had some conversations on this. The Inland Bays are an incredible resource that haven't had nearly the environmental focus that they should. About 10 years ago, there was a pollution control strategy that was put in place to really focus on removing what they call the point sources, or the pipes that are actually putting pollution into those resources. The work of my predecessor, John Hughes, who lives around here, that was then followed up by this administration, we've been able to remove almost all of those sources and getting those nutrients out of the bays. And there's kind of two main pieces left. One is in Millsboro, and there's some great work going on down there with a multi-million-dollar project, and also the project in Rehoboth, which I know there's some divergent opinions, but it's important to get those nutrients out of the bays. After you do that, the majority of the pollution that's coming into the bays is actually coming from runoff. And so we've been working to try to modernize some of the approaches to stormwater, trying to look at ways to have some more protections around wetlands. There's a lot of good conversations going on, but I agree with Bill that we haven't been able to leverage the different layers of government well. And so I think we're open to the idea of trying to pull together some stakeholders to look at this in a way that makes sense, because the reason the aquaculture bill passed this past year and the reason that the governor signed it is that it's a great example of a way to clean up the bays, because you're going to have those mussels and oysters actually cleaning up the sediment while getting clean water, while also creating an economic industry. If this resource does get polluted to the point where it's not swimmable and fishable in more places, it will have a big economic impact. And so we need to focus on it as an economic resource, because just this past year, we had to shut down a part of Love Creek because of the amount of pollution going into that area. And so we had to shut it down from shellfish harvesting because of that. So it does need to be a much greater focus. We are spending tens of millions of dollars over the last few years trying to clean up these wastewater treatment plants and try to put cover crops on the ground. But there's a lot more work to do.
On your last question about the buffers, we were disappointed. Not everybody in this room agrees with this, but we were disappointed by that ruling, because we thought the buffers made sense. It became a very contentious issue between state government and county government, and it's something, it's certainly a conversation we're willing to continue to have, but I can tell you there was certainly a lot of pushback, and I'm guessing some of the local legislators probably have a very different view of that, but it's an issue certainly worth us continuing to talk about.
Okay, he was asking about whether you'd be willing to set up a Blue Ribbon Committee.
So on the issue of the commission, what I'd like to do first is I'd like to have Colin, as the Secretary of Natural Resources, to look at this list. To me, so many times commissions, these task forces, Blue Ribbon Commissions and everything else, meet, they discuss, they produce reports that end up on a shelf. I mean, what we're interested in is action, improvements, and results. And so I think rather than, jump and say, okay, we're going to appoint some commission which may or may not produce anything, let's get into into your real recommendations and take a look at that. I think that would be a better way for us to go at first.
Good.
Good evening. Reverend Claudia Waters, Frankfort, Delaware. I'm here on behalf of the Coalition for Education, which represents many retired people and current educators and members of law enforcement's parents of students and grandparents and concerned citizens. Our problem is that we're overwhelmed about the future of our children and the climates of our schools here in Delaware. We're most troubled about the schoolhouse to the jailhouse. In reality, there are too many Afro-American students that are being sent to jail from the school. In an earlier study by Chief Family Court Judge Coons, and she addressed to Congress about the school to And along with Dr. Wolf, she did a study for the state of Delaware with the stats of the arrests from the 2010 to the 2011 school year, which she found that youth are arrested 3 times more often blacks than any other race, and 50% of them are girls in Delaware who enter into the juvenile system. We certainly do agree with Dr. Wolf's study on fussing and fighting about the black juvenile system, and that we have 3.5 more times likely to be arrested than whites within the school. So what we're seeing tonight and we're asking is that we feel that our jailhouses are filled with too many of our children, and we want more head, and we know that more are going to be headed that way. So we want to know that what can be done about addressing this issue toward us, because our SATs are falling at a high rate in the ethnic group, and we are testing very low. And we're looking for a problem solver, because we want to stop the system that has created from the schoolhouse to the jailhouse.
Thank you for the question. There's a lot there, and I think it's an incredibly important issue, and I'm going to get at it from a couple of different perspectives. So, and first of all, that problem with the disproportionate representation of African-American students who are going to jail is something that persists into adulthood, as I am sure that you know. So first of all, I mean, so much of this, there's a significant responsibility that the school system has, and there's also a responsibility for the community. And in a perfect world, you know, every child, no matter their race, no matter their ethnicity, would come from a home where you've got parents who can nurture them and have activities and all that so many of our kids take for granted. And so we have, I believe, an incredible responsibility to start with these children, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, I don't care, as early as we possibly can. And so we have made a focus with the support of a bipartisan group in the General Assembly. We have put a major focus on early childhood education. And I want to take a minute to tell you about it, because I believe that this is extraordinarily important for a couple of different reasons. First of all, there's research. It's not my research. It's not the research from our own Department of Education. But it's research, for example, from the Federal Reserve Bank in Minnesota that says the most effective economic development investment that a state can make is in early childhood education. There's lots of research like that. Beyond that, to the extent that I'm sure many of you have, if you've ever met a 5-year-old child who's already a year or two behind their peers, who already has a deficit in their vocabulary of 1,000 or a couple thousand words, it's a tragedy every single time. So about 2.5 years ago, when the state, we were in a position where there were some extra financial resources available, there was enough for me to essentially do one new initiative. And without much hesitation, the initiative that we chose was around early childhood education for all the reasons I just mentioned. And we've made a significant commitment. That commitment alone was $22 million additional per year. And here's what we're doing with it. Over the last three years, if you think about the low income, this is not exclusively African American, but it's low income kids in Delaware who are enrolled in preschool, we've gone from 1 out of every 20 to 1 out of every 3, those who are enrolled in a quality rated preschool program. And we believe that this is a game changer. And if you talk to teachers throughout all of our districts, we're not only doing a much better job of getting students into higher quality early childhood education, we're also doing a much better job of making the transition for them to our K-12 system much stronger. And this is a really, really important area. Beyond that, and maybe other people have questions about education, I wish we had an entire forum for me to share with you what's going on in education, because in the K-12 system, some very exciting work going on to help propel these kids. Yeah, I would. I would love to. So we'll arrange another forum specifically on education. But let me make a couple other points. One of the things that we have found, and this is 2 weeks ago, we announced a new initiative. We were the first state in the country to do so. and it's around the issue of whether our high-performing but low-income students go to college. And the fact of the matter is they don't. And when I say, and this is not true just in Delaware, this is true across the country. When I say high-performing, we know based on a student's SAT score or PSAT score whether they're going to be successful, whether they could be successful in college. And unfortunately, for so many of these low-income students, the idea of applying to college is just not something that is part of their life's experience. It's not within the realm of their family's experience. They can't come up with the money to even apply. So what we have done, we've partnered with the College Board. They're the folks who run the PSAT and the SAT. And first of all, we know who these kids are because every kid in Delaware takes the SAT, every junior in Delaware takes the SAT during the school day. So we know how they do. And so we can identify. There are hundreds, and we can tell you the names. There are hundreds of low-income students in Delaware who could absolutely be successful if they go to college. But they don't go because they don't apply. So we've got this partnership with the College Board where we are focusing on in a very meaningful way. First of all, we have secured application fee waivers so that when they apply to college, they don't have to pay for the application. That's a big deal for a lot of these students. Secondly, we've got volunteers from places like Bank of America and students at our institutions for higher education who are sitting down with our students to help them fill out their college application, to help their families fill out the financial aid forms. November is college application month in Delaware. I just earlier today was meeting with all of the superintendents, and they've got activities in 20 of the high schools in Delaware to make sure we're doing all we can to support these kids. So, I mean, I could spend an hour responding to your question, and your question deserves an hour's worth of response. But what I want you to know is that from the time these children are little, the work we're doing to, and this is district by district, school by school, to engage their families in their education, to propel them while they're in school, to make sure that they have that they can go if they want to go to college. And if they don't want to go to college, there are plenty of people for whom college is not the right answer. And we've got to make sure in those cases that these students are learning skills that are actually relevant to what they're going to do for the rest of their lives. I talked to, you know, we're getting better in Delaware. Our high school graduation rate is steadily getting better. Our achievement gap in terms of performance, African-American, Hispanic, and Caucasian kids is narrowing. That's a good thing. But we still have considerable work to do. And across so many of our agencies, the Department of Education, the Kids Department, so many of our agencies, this is a major focus. So I hope we will do another forum, and I hope I have a much longer opportunity to respond.
Governor, first let me thank you for coming out this evening. My name's Frank Knotts. I'm from Bridgeville. These town hall meetings were billed as being about the economy and jobs. I'd like to ask you why you've waited 5 years for this initiative, considering that Fisker has failed, Bloom is asking for more money, AstraZeneca is downsizing, and also considering that your party is in one-party rule in Delaware. Our last legislative session was filled up with gun bills, gay marriage, and bathroom bills. Could you please tell us how many jobs were created by the bathroom bill? Unless you want Mr. Levin to answer that.
We started our focus on jobs from day one of this administration.
Thank you.
We started our focus on jobs from day one of this administration. My first full day in office, in fact, we started meeting with companies. We've probably met with 1,000 of them over the last 4.5 years. In fact, Director Levin and I today met with a couple. So let me give a little bit of a sense of some of the economic activity here in Delaware and what we're doing specifically focused on jobs. Let me talk about a few examples right here in this area. And some of you I know may have a different perspective on this, but I don't know when the last time is that anybody invested $100 million and created 700 jobs in Sussex County. But a company is planning to do just that in Millsboro, Harim, which bought the old Allen Family Foods. And by the way, they're going to spend $10 million on their wastewater system, the stormwater system, wastewater, to make sure that the water is improved from the water that goes out is actually improved from the water that they get. Just last week, we were in, maybe two weeks ago, we were in Seaford. Many of you know of the company ILC Dover. They're based in Frederica. It's a great company. They've made these spacesuits for astronauts for decades. They're diversifying. And they recently bought a company that had a manufacturing plant in Mexico. And they've decided to bring 115 jobs back from Mexico to Delaware. And they're putting them in Seaford. And if you talk to the CEO of that company, a very thoughtful, effective CEO, a guy named Bill Wallach, what he would tell you, because he told us, he said the workforce in Seaford is phenomenal, and the speed with which he was able to get things done in Delaware is a speed that he would not have been able to achieve any place else. Secretary Key just recently, and he and I visited Hopkins Dairy, which is doing great. You're from Bridgeville. Go talk to Marty Miller of Miller Metal in Bridgeville, right there next to O.A. Newton. And talk to Marty about his business. And this is an incredibly interesting story. Marty cuts steel. And most of the time when we hear stories about the effects of technology, most of the time people are losing their jobs because of technology. This is one of the really difficult things about the economy that we live in. In the case of Marty Miller in Bridgeville, what he'll tell you, he's deployed significant new technology. It's allowed him to bring his costs down, so he's more competitive than ever, and as a result, he's hiring more people. Up in Newcastle County, pretty much every bank, J.P. Morgan Chase, adding 1,200 jobs. Bank of America, adding 500 jobs in Delaware, even though they're cutting 30,000 elsewhere. I could keep going, but the point is there's a lot of exciting growth underway. The pace of it is certainly not what any of us would like it to be. But let me give you a sense of how we approach the issue of economic development in the first place, because I think it's important that you understand. Our approach to creating jobs is largely guided by the conversations that we have with businesses in Delaware and businesses located elsewhere that may be doing business here or thinking about doing business here. When Director Levin and I visit, and we've visited, as I say, probably 1,000 of them in the last 4.5 years, and for that matter, when Secretary Key and I visit businesses, we ask one question, and that question is, what can we do to facilitate your success? Because these days, that's really what matters most, because we know that when more people are being put to work, that will help resolve so many of the other challenges that we face as a state and that we face as a country. So let me share with you what it is that they tell us when we visit these businesses. Number one, it's about the quality of the workforce. And that's true. That was true when we were at Hopkins Dairy a couple of weeks ago when they talked about the importance of having a very hardworking group of people who can help out on their dairy farm. It's true when you're talking to the CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase or the CEO of DuPont or Marty Miller of Miller Metal and everybody in between. So the quality of the workforce, which gets to this issue of making sure that our students get the proper training in skills that are valued in the market today and that will be valued in the market tomorrow and years from now. Incredibly important. That's number one. Very much linked with that is what's going on in our schools. It's not incredibly important. I'm a huge believer that the states and the countries that do a better job of educating their citizens today will have a stronger economy in the future. It is that clear, and I can tell you from personal experience, having visited a number of countries around the world, whether it's India or Israel or Korea, it's incredible to see how many multinational companies, you name it, IBM, Microsoft, Google, DuPont, how many of these companies are putting research and development or manufacturing facilities around the world in countries where 25 years ago it would not have happened. Because 25 or 30 years ago, by definition, those jobs would have either come here, maybe to Western Europe, Canada, or Australia. But the bottom line is that now around the world, these companies find very effective, very good workforces. And we've got to make sure that we are more than keeping up. So what the businesses talk to us about, quality of workforce, quality of schools, cost of doing business. That includes everything from the cost of labor to real estate to taxes to energy and the like. That matters. And there are some businesses that we're just not going to get, because it's all they care about is the cost, and they're going to go someplace probably to the south. Businesses care about having a strong linkage with institutions of higher education, oftentimes. And they also care a lot about the quality of life, which is why, I mean, I think you think about here in this part of Sussex County, this is such a wonderful place to live. And it is. It's a wonderful, and that matters because the let me just give you one statistic. There are 3 billion people in the world looking for jobs, and there are 1.2 billion jobs available. Think about that. There are 3 billion people in the world looking for jobs. There are 1.2 billion jobs available. And so we are in what's essentially a global competition for jobs, which really means we're in a global competition for talent because that's where the jobs are going to go. And so when we think about what that means, talented people want to work in places where they want to live. And so when I think about being able to ride my bike from Rehoboth to Lewis on the Junction and Breakwater Trail or the new Gordon's Pond Trail that we're doing the ribbon on in a few weeks, those kinds of things make a big difference. Having the ocean, having the other beautiful parts of our state, incredibly important. And then the last piece, very important, businesses want to be located in communities where the government is very responsive. And so, and I don't mean responsive just by having a town hall meeting. I mean responsive that we're fast, we're thoughtful. So we just completed a couple of months ago an effort that had significant support from both sides of the aisle in the General Assembly, an effort to look at all of our regulations. Every single one of our state agencies that has a regulation was required to have a public hearing in each of the 3 counties. And we invited members of the public, we invited businesses to come in to share with us what were their ideas about regulations that don't make any sense, what were things that just, we ought to be doing differently. And as a result of that effort, we are changing or eliminating 130 of them. We still have fundamental responsibilities around water quality, around the air, keeping people safe. Those are ongoing and important responsibilities. But if we have regulations that just don't make any sense and that are standing in the way of people creating jobs, we ought to do something about it. So that's a quick summary of what it is that we have heard from businesses here in Delaware, as well as around the country and elsewhere. And it's really been guiding a lot of our economic development efforts. I'll say this. As long as there is a single Delawarean who wants to work and who is not working, we will not rest. The pace of this recovery is not anything that is not what we would like it to be. And we are going to continue to wake up every single day to focus on how we can put more of our neighbors back to work.
Thank you, Governor. And thanks for the question about jobs and the economy. Very important topic. Jim, got another question here?
Yeah, my name is Steve Irwin. I'm from Millsboro. And Governor, you referred to the cost of energy.
Yeah.
And that's what I would like to address.
Mm-hmm.
The contract with Bloom
mm-hmm.
is neither green nor efficient. Kilowatt cost per hour from Bloom is over $200. Using a gas-fired generator, it would cost $65. We're committed to this for 20 years. It is neither efficient nor green. It's totally red, and we're going to pay for it. Why would you pick this? It is not efficient, it doesn't work, and it is proven that this is not new technology, it's old technology that has never worked.
Well, with all due respect, customers like Google, eBay, Adobe, Apple, Walmart, Federal Express, Bank of America, Verizon, all think differently because those are the customers. And so we believe in a time when we are trying to do everything we can to create jobs, this is a company with a proven technology, not an unproven technology, a proven technology. We've seen it work. And all those customers I just talked about are using it today in different parts of the country, many in California, but some in other parts of the country as well. And so Bloom has already built. This is Bloom's first factory outside of California. They've already created several dozen jobs. They've made a commitment to Delaware to create hundreds more, and they are on schedule to create those jobs. And so we believe that in a time when we're doing everything we can to create jobs like that, this was a a very viable thing to do. And I think if you see the factory and you see the people who are already working there and the additional people who will be working there, that it was a sensible thing to do.
Governor, just a quick follow-up on that. What do you say to the point that the gentleman made? It's $200 per kilowatt hour versus in this technology, and with the surplus and the embarrassment of riches this country has now in terms of energy natural resources, when you can do it for $65 a kilowatt hour. Well, who's going to bear the cost of that extra money for those kilowatt hours?
So first of all, the natural gas, the Bloom boxes are powered for the most part by natural gas. So as natural gas prices come down, that benefit will accrue to users of the Bloom boxes, whether it's here in Delaware and at Delmarva, or whether it's someplace else. I think some of the information that has come out recently, unfortunately, has left out a very important part of the equation, and this is that part of the equation. Normally, utilities have to pay what are called capacity charges if there is a shortage of capacity to in terms of the electrical market. Electricity markets, there's a penalty that these companies have to pay. As a result of the contract with Bloom, there's actually an offset against what it is that folks in Delaware are paying. That's number one. Number two, utilities in Delaware are required over by the year 2025 to have 25% of their electricity generated from renewable sources. Typically, the utilities have to go out and purchase what are called credits for that. Because in this case, Delmarva is actually buying this power directly from Bloom. That, again, is an offset and a reduction. So while it is true that the customers are paying more than they otherwise would, if you look at it over, in total right now, energy bills are down, even including Bloom, in large part because of the additional supply of the natural gas.
Thank you, sir. We got another question there, and I'm going to be in, because, you know, time's racing on, so I'll give you about a minute to state and then put your question if you would, sir. Thank you, George.
Good evening, Governor. My name George. Is George Parrish from Long Neck, Delaware, and the state of Delaware has a prevailing wage law legislation laws. Would you support legislation for a 2-year suspension of Delaware's prevailing wages to create jobs, promote economic growth, and save taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars?
I'm not certain that reducing people's wages by doing that is necessarily the way for us to go right now, but I appreciate the question.
As a follow-up to that, may I remind you of all the states, including Governor Barry, who even went to next door to Maryland, and when Virginia has these laws and their economic growth does not represent anything other than far greater growth than we experience here in the state of Delaware.
Yeah, but I think, George, if you look at other states, I mean, it is interesting. I mean, the states that have been doing the best over the last few years by far are those with energy. So North Dakota, South Dakota, Wyoming, Texas. The states that have been doing the next best, and it'll be interesting to see what happens now with what's going on in Washington. States with a significant federal government presence have been doing very, very well because it's been an incredibly reliable source of growth. So I think there are significant differences. Thanks for the question.
Thank you, sir.
Governor, I'm Frank Barnes from Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. During your initial campaign, you had made a promise, and there's a lot of manufactured homes in the state of Delaware. You had made a promise that you would take manufactured housing out of the DMV.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what you were trying to accomplish, and that's probably my question. What were you trying to accomplish? Let me finish.
Go ahead.
What were you trying to accomplish by doing that, and why hasn't it happened?
If I remember the issue correctly, there was essentially for folks who were in manufactured homes, and it's been a little while since I've taken a look at it. There was essentially a penalty by being within the DMV and considered as a vehicle as opposed to being housing. And I can't remember all the issues we have. And I think I was proud of the progress that we made in this last session with the support and the advocacy of many people in the manufactured home communities. This is an issue that probably deserves continuing a discussion. I just don't remember all the details around it.
Thank you, sir. Have another question there?
Hi, I'm Sandy Bisgood. I'm from Lewis, Delaware. I'm happy to live here. And one of the things I really like about living here is that we are a tax-friendly state, and we're known as a tax-friendly state, and it attracts people. The housing industry has taken an awful lot of hard hits over the last few years and is just starting to come back. And the reality is that Delaware, while it is a very tax-friendly state once you're here, has one of the highest transfer taxes in the nation. What can be done and what will you do to ensure that the fragile recovery that we're starting to see doesn't get hurt?
Well, the best way of making sure that the recovery continues is to do everything we can to create additional jobs. And so, I mean, that is, you know, that's answers one, two, and three. With respect to housing and the transfer tax specifically, you know, the challenge, we'd all love to see lower taxes across every single category. But if we do that, the question is, what is it that you're cutting out? And so we've not yet gotten to a place, given the nature of our budget, given the challenges on the budget, where we've been in a position to cut that particular transfer tax. That being said, I mean, I was with a housing developer today in Wilmington. He's building a new project in Claymont, and he said it's just absolutely incredible how much activity he's seeing there. I know in this parts of this area, it's come back strong as well. No question that the housing industry is a really important one in our state. We look forward to continuing to support it, but I also just can't make promises that I can't keep.
Thank you, sir.
I'm not so much asking for a reduction as a commitment that it won't go up.
There's been no discussion whatsoever that I've heard, or that, and I'm looking at members of the General Assembly who are agreeing with me. I've not heard any conversations about any kind of increase in the real estate transfer tax.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next, Jim.
Stuart Stoller from Lewis, Delaware. I'm concerned about, we're talking about jobs here, and one of the things that I'm hearing is that workman's compensation is going to go up by 30% to 30%. Now, as a GM for 30 years in this town, in this area, I can tell you that you're going to run every restaurant in this area out of business. And along with that also, if you're going to go up to 30%, are you then going to make the insurance company vet the doctors so they don't send you to the least expensive? Because I can show you what they did to me in this state.
So thanks for the question. The issue is a very important one. It got a lot of attention in this last General Assembly. And for those of you who are not familiar with the issue, workers' compensation insurance. Until about, I would say, 8 years ago, Delaware's rates were really quite high and made us very uncompetitive. At that time, under former Governor Minner, a group was put together to take a look, made a number of changes, and what we saw basically for 7 years was a significant improvement in our workers' compensation rates. We became much more competitive if you measured us against other states in the region and other states in the country. Last year, there was a proposal for a very significant increase once again, and so we put another group together made up of people, members of both parties in the General Assembly, members of the business community, lawyers, doctors, you know, everybody who has an interest in this. It was led by the Lieutenant Governor, and they came up with a pretty significant list of reforms. Those were signed into law not very long ago. It is true. Since then, we've recently heard that the folks who are behind workers' comp are talking about another significant increase. I can tell you, none of us is happy about it, we are working. We're going to continue to work very hard to make sure that people don't get priced out of the market. We do understand, and I think if you talk to folks in the General Assembly in terms of the efforts that were made in this last session around jobs, the work that we did around workers' compensation insurance was some of the most important work that we did. So you've got folks on both sides of the aisle who understand what a big deal this is for local businesses.
And then they turn around and send them to you, regardless of what quality of health care you're going to get.
All right, and I appreciate the comment. I don't know the details. I can't respond to that, but I understand the concern, and we'll take it back and make sure that the committee that's working on it hears that perspective. Thank you.
Okay, Tom, got another question there.
Good evening, Governor. My name is Will. I live in Lincoln near the Evelyn I. Morris Early Childhood Center. My question is simply, there's no comment here, it's really just a question of before and after. Since the beginning of your term, I'm wondering how many insurance companies there were in Delaware, and now with new Obamacare, how many insurance companies have signed up for Obamacare in Delaware. Thank you.
Do you know the answer to that? I'm gonna try. I don't know the specific answer. I'm gonna turn this over to. Oh, Secretary Rita Landgraf of our Department of Health and Social Services has arrived. I'm going to turn this over to her. Let me say, we have been the last few days since the commencement of the Affordable Care Act. There's been quite a high level of interest from people in Delaware, people who have logged on to the system to express an interest in enrollment and the like. So Secretary Landgraf is probably not operating on the most sleep, but if you could answer that question, it'd be great.
The plans that are going to be afforded on the marketplace or the exchange, as it is commonly referred to in Delaware, there's actually three insurance companies, Highmark, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Coventry Health, and Coventry Life, will be selling their products on the marketplace in the individual market. For the small business market, there's two plans that will be offered. Highmark Blue Shield, Blue Cross Blue Shield, and Coventry Health will be selling their products. There will be 19 offerings of products on the individual market, and we are expecting two additional that will be multi-state plans.
ChooseHealthDE.com, Rita?
Yes, ChooseHealthDE.com.
So for those who are interested, ChooseHealthDE.com. We have about 90,000 people in Delaware who are uninsured. We expect about 30,000 of them to be covered by the additional Medicaid opportunities. We expect probably about 30,000 of them to sign up for the exchange, and then there will still be about 30,000 that are left.
Thank you, Governor. We're going to, you can see how quickly the time goes when you ask questions getting answered. So at 7:30, we're going to take three more questions. Okay?
Okay, fine.
Start right here.
How you doing, Governor? John Morris, and as you know, I'm appointed by you to the RTA. And a lot of the people in here tonight are from manufactured housing. I live in Camelot Meadows, a manufactured home. And thank God SB 33 was passed and signed. It is going to be a large buffer for all communities that people live on leased land. However, the other gentleman that asked the question, and Mr. Barnes, you couldn't remember everything, and I understand that. But you've offered to meet with some of the other people that ask questions. And I think the housing question still is something that we have to address one-on-one and get the answers. And insurance for us, for instance, and one of the people here earlier said the housing market was really hit bad and it's starting to come back. None of the housing that's on privately owned land was hit like housing on leased land, and nobody's expenses have gone down. They keep continuing going up, and thank God again for SB 33. So I'm asking you to commit that you would meet to us. And
you know my door is always open.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I'd say, and maybe GMD may have to shut off, but maybe I'll take, since a bunch of you are standing, I'll take the questions of anybody who's standing. I may try to give shorter answers, but I want to give all of you who are already standing a chance to ask a question. Anybody else who's not standing yet, maybe you can submit your questions and we can try to respond.
Sure, separately. The index cards will be out there.
Let's try to make the questions very brief, okay?
Good evening. On today's News Journal newspaper, on page B1, in the article entitled "A Tool to Lure Best Teachers," you, Governor Markell, encourage UD students to use the website joindelawareschools.org as a recruitment tool for prospective teachers. Will that same information be presented to DSU students?
I'd love to. Great question. I mean, of course, it's available for all prospective teachers. I would love to go have the same opportunity to speak to the folks in the education department at DSU and really at any of the institutions in the state. Thank you. Now,
Governor
Thank
Markell, you. Will you please contact Abby Betts and Jennifer Hill at your task force and commit to requiring a thorough investigation regarding a monumental travesty of justice involving 5 Delaware Conaway senior citizen siblings, 3 of whom are veterans with honorable discharges, whose property was illegally sold on West State Street in Millsboro, Delaware. Two categories I think you're really interested in, senior citizens and veterans. And one final question.
Oh, wait, now hold on.
Executive Order 8.
You got that much, so write that down on a card and please give it out there. Thank you very much for your question. Next, sir.
Okay, I have a question. I went to the DENREC meeting at in Dover, and you guys are proposing legislation that won't be voted on. It's what the Secretary of DENREC, if he wants to sign it, signs it, that's going to cause cars prices to go up between $2,000 to $5,000, $2,000 being DENREC's price of increasing on cars, and $5,000 is what the man at the meeting said who sells cars. And my question is in an economy like this, because it's emission laws that we're going to be following California on, in an economy like this, do you think it's wise to put emission standards on cars that will drive the prices up when $2,000 to $5,000 may not be money, not be a lot of money to some?
I'll tell you what, I'm gonna let the Secretary respond to that. I will tell you there's actually a fair bit of misinformation around this issue. I think a lot of states in the region have done this, but Secretary Romero, go ahead.
Good. No, and thank you for your question. Thanks for coming to the hearing. There are two different standards that states are looking at. One is for zero emission vehicles, like electric vehicles, things like that. We're not going forward with that standard. Maryland has, Pennsylvania is, New Jersey is. We're going to wait because we don't think we're ready yet. There's a low emission vehicle standard that everybody in the region has already adopted. You're already paying the premium for a lot of those cars. They're cleaner. 50% of the pollution that's from Delaware is coming from vehicles right now. And so there really isn't an option. When you go to a lot of these lots, because we're buying in a regional market, those are the cars that are available anyway. And this allows us to get credit for that in a way that helps improve our air quality. But I'd be happy to talk to you afterwards if you want some more detail.
Yeah, Thank you. I think we better, in the interest of time, thank you for your understanding.
Scott Speak from Laurel, Delaware. I was wondering what you thought the economic impact was of the law that passed requiring every gun retailer to do transfers, whether they sold the gun or not, and caused Walmart to back out of selling firearms altogether. How many people you thought were laid off because of that, and how much economic activity was stopped?
They were already required, I believe, to provide these background checks. I mean, the bottom line is, in Delaware, we had a requirement for a long time that if you go to a federally licensed gun dealer, they do a background check. And so the question is whether or not it made sense to have a loophole that you could go to somebody else and not to have a background check done. And we didn't believe it did. But I believe, and I'm looking to see if Andy is not here.
Required them to do transfers, not the background checks always been required. What it required them to do was to, if I sold my gun to somebody else, they would do the transfer, they sold the gun or not.
And yeah,
they didn't guns into their store.
I don't remember if that's specifically why Walmart decided to stop selling, but I mean, in the end, we thought this was one of the most important things that government can do and must do is keep people safe. And I know there are a lot of people in this room who disagree with me. And I just, with all due respect, the idea that you're required, if you go to a federally licensed dealer, to have a background check done, but you're not required to have one done if you go to somebody else, just did not make any sense to me. So it was a very contentious issue. Obviously, a lot of folks some people in the General Assembly agreed, some didn't, but that's where we are.
Thanks for the question. Next.
Yes, Governor, thank you so much for being here. I greatly appreciate the time that you've set aside for us. My name's Rob Arlett, live down in Sebago, and I will be honest with you, Sandy stole my question regarding a transfer tax, just for the record, Sandy.
Okay.
We're on a committee together, but I had another question about the sea level rise, but I think I'm going to shift, if I may, sir, and that is, I moved here full-time 8 years ago from Northern Virginia, and I think I started the real estate problem because I signed the dotted line and created it right as soon as I signed. And I also started my own real estate company 3 years ago. My question is this, is I have a 22-year-old son. He graduated from Indian River High School, and he wanted to get out of Dodge, as do so many of the peers. They want to get out of here because there's no opportunity here. I came here because I saw opportunity, and it is the American dream. I will tell you that I believe is alive and well, but we don't feel it. We don't see it. And the question is, why? And I want to know specifically, it is the opinion of many, more government, less private industry. How can we increase the private sector, i.e. the American dream, back in Sussex County and back in Delaware?
Well, I mean, I think I answered that previously. I mean, the best information that we get is to talk to businesses themselves. And so, you know, I mentioned ILC, which has just brought back 115 jobs from Mexico.
Let me rephrase that. Small, not corporate, small business, entrepreneurs who create the engine of this recovery.
I mean, I have met so many entrepreneurs who live within 5 miles of this high school, who are doing unbelievably well. And so, I mean, I think, you know, there are plenty here in Sussex County who are knocking it out of the park. That being said, I do think we've got an ongoing responsibility to make sure. Let me put it this way. As I said earlier, how do people decide where they want to live? Well, one, is there a good opportunity for them to work? And two, is it the kind of place where they're going to want to live? And so my view is that in this area, there are so many reasons that people want to live here. And I think we don't have enough of the, you know, in New Castle County, lots of big employers. The banks especially, DuPont, AstraZeneca, not as big as it used to be, but still big. W.L. Gore, Ashland, lots of them. Bottom line is, down in this part of the state, there are fewer of them. And the nature of economic development these days is you don't typically get companies saying, okay, I'm going to put 1,000 or 15 jobs in this community or that community. The best economic development for sure is to support the local businesses that are here already and to see them grow. And we think the best way to do that is to make sure that we've got great schools, that there is a great workforce, that this is an easy place to do business, that the cost of living and the cost of doing business is reasonable. I mean, to me, those are the fundamental factors. When I talk to most entrepreneurs, those are the things that they care about most. They want to be in a place, obviously, depending upon the business, where the market is. And so I think we need to continue to focus on those kinds of things. We need to focus more on what we'd call the innovation economy, the entrepreneurial economy. We've got a number of things underway there. But to the extent that you or anybody else here has suggestions for additional things that we can be doing, we are all ears, because we'd love to hear your suggestions.
Thank you for the question.
But I will say, I mean, I think, and I have met so many of them, and including just within the last couple of weeks, people who have moved here from elsewhere, started a business, you know, have added 150 jobs in the last 6 or 7 years.
Good. Next, please. Name, town, and quick question, if you don't mind.
My name is Jane Hovington. I'm from Georgetown, Delaware. Governor, you stated when you were speaking of education that everyone is not college bound. And with that in mind, why is there no longer a vocational school here in Sussex County for those students who are not going to college, to provide them the training in electricity and plumbing, so that when they graduate from school with a high school diploma, they have some type of skills that they can go on and find employment someplace else besides in the chicken factory? Because there are electricians, there are plumbers who need assistance, HVAC employers who need assistance, but because our kids are coming out of school with no training in those type of fields, we find them on the streets as opposed to being employed.
The high school level vocational training.
I mean, I do believe that Sussex Tech and some of the other local schools do continue to do a good job in many of those areas, but I would agree. I mean, I think when I talk to students who have dropped out of school or who are thinking about dropping out of school, too often when I ask them why, what they tell me is that they believe that what they are doing in school is just not very relevant to what they're going to do for the rest of their lives. And I think that's a problem. And I think it's an area, I think the whole area around career and technical education is something that we need to continue to focus on. And I would agree. I mean, I think back to my own days at Newark High School. And, you know, many of the high schools in Delaware have fewer of the vocational opportunities than there used to be. So I think it's an area that we need to continue to make progress on. I don't know if Secretary Murphy wants to add anything to that. So I think, Jane, I appreciate the question. I think it's also important, by the way, that this is a conversation. You know, there is a Department of Education in Delaware, but there are also 19 school districts. And I know Bob Fulton from CAPE was here earlier. I don't know if he's still here. He may be out at the game. This is a conversation that I believe needs to take place district by district, because we, you know, the role of the state, we do provide some overall support for the districts, but essentially education is delivered district by district. And I think it's certainly a conversation that I welcome, but it's one that also needs to happen school by school, district by district.
We're going to get to our last question. Before we do that, I want to again say thank you to everybody for coming out tonight. Thank you to Governor Markell and members of his cabinet for coming down and sharing your thoughts with us tonight. We appreciate it very much. Let's give him a round of applause right now, please. Because what we're going to do is we'll take the question, and then you can give some final remarks, okay? Final question.
Thank you. My name is Gwendolyn Jones. I live in Milton, Delaware. And my question is, considering the transgressions, abuses, excesses, and even illegalities that have occurred in municipal, county, state offices and personnel, what is your position and plan on having them held personally, financially, and criminally responsible?
Well, that's a pretty broad question. I mean, my view, I think, is the view of most people in the state. When there's wrongdoing, it ought to be punished accordingly. You know, what, I think one of the two of the most important words as it relates to those of us in government and what it is that you all ought to expect of us is transparency and accountability. You know, we have an obligation to share with you what's going on in state government, and we actually believe, and sometimes it's painful, but we believe it's actually better for democracy. You know, so one of the things that we've done is we put the state's checkbook online. So you can, anybody can go, you know, to their computer and search for all the payments that are made but with your money, because it is your money, and so you're entitled to know. You know, there's an old expression that's sunlight is the best disinfectant. And what that really means is that, you know, the more that, you know, you all can see what's going on, the more informed you can be, the more informed that you are about what's going on in our state, the better our democracy works. And so I think that's really important. The second piece of it is the accountability. And, you know, I think one of the things that we all as cabinet secretaries try to do is hold ourselves accountable first. Let's face it, we're going to make mistakes. Every one of us is human. And, you know, in our business, the challenge is when I make a mistake, you all know about it. Well, the question is, how do we respond? And do we bemoan the fact that we've made a mistake, or do we wake up the next day and say we've got to get better? And we, you know, I learned a bunch of things tonight, of things that we need to do better on. And I think that's what I expect of myself. It's what my cabinet expects of themselves, and it's what we expect of the people who work for us. So let me use that, if I could, as a segue to my you know, very brief closing remarks. I really do appreciate all of you coming out tonight. When Jim Ford from Lewis was one of the, he came in sort of toward the end. He said, "This is a big crowd." I said, "It is a big crowd," and I'm guessing they didn't all come here to tell me what a great job I'm doing. And so this is, but I mean, honestly, this is one of the great things about Delaware. Is, you know, I have a pretty good sense of how we're doing as an administration when I'm out on the street. And because people feel very free in a positive way to come up and tell me about things that we're doing well, to tell me about things that we could be doing better. And we try to listen. You know, in Delaware, we have term limits for governors. I've got 3.5 years to go. I'm going to be finished in January of 2017. And I love this job. The blessing that the people of Delaware have bestowed upon me to serve as their governor is something that it's really, frankly, it's difficult to find words for. And we're doing, you know, we wake up every single day, all of us, trying to do the very best we can. And knowing what that fixed date is in January of 2017 has a way of really forcing the mind. Because every day that goes by is one less day that we have to make this state all that it can be. And so the commitment that I make to you, and I make it on behalf of all of these very talented and hardworking and dedicated cabinet secretaries, is we're going to wake up every single day between now and January of 2017, and we're going to do our darn level best to leave this state better than we found it and to make it better for the next generation than it is today. You know, I grew up here. My wife and I grew up together in Newark. We met in kindergarten. We graduated together from Newark High School. We've known each other forever. And I ran for governor for a simple reason. I want Delaware to be the same place of incredible opportunity for our kids and for all your kids that it was for us. And I think we've got a darn good shot of making that happen. It's hard. These are challenging times in this country. They've been tough times in this state. But we're making good progress, and we aren't going to give up. Thanks for coming out tonight.
Thank you all, and safe travels home.